This is the Emerging Women Podcast, where we become inspired to live and lead from the truth of who we are. We're creating a new paradigm for power that includes the feminine perspective because the world needs it. Hello and welcome, Emerging Women podcast listeners. We've got a big treat today. It's time to talk about money. And we're talking money with Christine Walsh, who has just written a book called Be the Queen of Your Money. And she focuses her work on women and some of the mindsets and some of the patterning that we have inherited through not just the patriarchy, but our own limiting beliefs to help us outcreate a limiting relationship with money and readjust that so that we can all feel abundance just by being enough and living and leading with the truth of who we are, which is our jam here at Emerging Women. A few notes about Christine. Not only has she written a book, but she started her career in traditional finance and had a, we're going to hear her story, but had a very strong turnaround in her relationship with money. And as a woman, as a financier, as somebody who is already in the industry, turned it around, picked up, moved out west, and created an entirely different relationship with money, which we'll hear about more, but essentially paving the way for what does it mean to be yourself, be authentic, and also live abundantly with no ceiling. She's a coach. She has her own courses online, and she actually does the books, if you would. She is a working financial manager for entrepreneurs. Guess what, people? Like Emerging Women. Yes, this is true. I have worked with her for, I think, Christine, it's been 3 years, 4 years, almost 4 years. And believe me, we don't just talk about the numbers. We talk about my mindset and what's holding me back. And how can we think of Emerging Women way bigger than I've been thinking about it? She has helped take our company to the next level in more ways than just the bottom line. And it is my great pleasure to invite her onto the show. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you. Oh my goodness. It's so great to be here and to have this conversation with you, knowing our work together and knowing what Emerging Women means out in the world and what we are as a collective shifting and changing through this tool of money. So it's really a pivotal time for us. So many changes going on. And I'm just glad to have this conversation. It's just always so exciting, which was not always the case. I did not, as much as I went to business school and worked in finance and worked on Wall Street, I grew up in New York. So every once in a while, you'll hear my New York accent come through. I wasn't always comfortable talking about money. And although I had the book smarts, I didn't necessarily have the emotional intelligence, emotional awareness of my own mindset around money for many reasons and why it is the work that I do now with entrepreneurs is to establish a mindset around money that allows them to grow and have this tool of money come into their life and be a steward of it so that we can change things in this on this planet in many ways. So
totally. Couple of things that I love what you said. First of all, we are going to give a 3 cheers for money. That's right. We're laying the groundwork. Money is good. Money is great. We love money. It's okay to love money. Okay. So let's just start there. And that's a lot of what I'm getting out of your book is taking out the sort of, you know, guilt for wanting, it's okay to want what we want around that. So number one, the other thing you said was the whole collective and moving from my money, my, you know, right? Because it can be a very solitary journey right. to a collective. I'm interested in hearing about that. But first, can we start with your story? Because you actually, I think it's chapter 2 where you say my difficult conversation with money. And I'd like you to just lay the groundwork. with how you've come to do the work that you're doing now.
Yeah, thank you. We all have to have a difficult conversation with money. And the most difficult one is the one that we have to have with ourselves, and the honesty and the humility that comes with that. So as I shared, grew up in New York, was my dad was a firefighter. My mom was a secretary. They groomed us, my brother and I both, to go to business school to work and have basically what they would consider a better life than they had, you know, make more money, live, do the American dream, all that good stuff. And I did do that and followed that path. I remember, I think this might be in the book, if I remember correctly, telling my mom, she, you know, when I was thinking about what, where to go to college and what I wanted to focus on, she goes, "Chris, what do you, would you like to, you know, study?" And I said, "I really want to go to the Fashion Institute of Technology," which is a high fashion, I wanted to be a merchandiser for Bloomingdale's. And she's like, "Yeah, no, why don't you go to business school so you can make all the money you want and then you can buy all the clothes you want?" And so the dream was squashed at that point of me being a famous fashion merchandiser for Bloomingdale's. Mm-hmm. So I did, I went to business school and got my degrees in finance and accounting and worked my way up the corporate ladder through investment banking. And when I was in my late 20s, when 9/11 happened, and working down on Wall Street, working in the financial district, and seeing that you could lose your life in a matter of moments. Being in my 20s, living in Manhattan, there's no other way to say feeling invincible until something like that happens. And so really took stock of my life as you do at the age of 28, whatever that looked like, but started to question, and I started to realize that life is short and that I wasn't really doing what I wanted to do in my life. And so I quit my job. I told my family I was leaving them. No, none of them ever moved west of the Hudson River.
Oh God. Yeah.
I broke up with my boyfriend who was serious with for a few years. And I moved out to Colorado, which I am still in Colorado at this point in the northwest corner of the state, and love it. And a lot of it had to do with in quality of life improvement. So a lot of times around money, we're realizing, you know, the philosophy that I like to bring to the table is it's not about getting more things, it's about actually improving the quality of our life as a whole. And that's inherent. It's a tool that we use to change things. Mm-hmm. And when I got out here, I was like, okay, I can do anything. I actually was a bartender for about a year and a half at a bar when I first moved here. I'm in a ski town up in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. And I remember being like, oh my God, you know, a few months ago I was in stockings and heels, and here I am slugging ice and pouring beers and hurricanes. It was a New Orleans type of bar here in Steamboat, and realizing, you know, this is feels like freedom. So with that said, of my sort of money management, 401k, grounded, tracking my money, all of that good stuff kind of went out the window a little bit, because I had found this newfound freedom of just living in the moment. And so as life developed here in Steamboat, I bought a couple of properties. I started working for a financial controller, and we became impacted very much because we're in a tourist area, area that very much focuses on housing and tourism and real estate. The housing crisis of 2008 happened. And that happened. I lost my job. I was working as a financial controller for a real estate developer, lost my job there, lost one of my homes to foreclosure, and really had a crappy, crappy boyfriend at the time.
Oh God, this is like, twist the knife. We are on the bathroom floor. You call it being on the bathroom floor.
The proverbial laying on the bathroom floor. I was like, and I'm 2,000 miles away from my people in a way, you know? So that was about 2009, 2010, and realized I had to pick myself up. So a friend of mine said, "Why don't you She saw me falling apart. She was like, why don't you go see this financial advisor downtown? They can help you rebuild. And I was like, I don't know about this. I don't really want like someone telling me that I haven't really been doing such a great job with any of my finances lately. Nonetheless, I had no one really else to turn to. And I really had, so I went to go see him and he looked at me like I had four heads. I just remember like starting to well up because it wasn't, at this stage of the game, it wasn't looking at my finances. It wasn't looking at the books. It wasn't looking at the numbers. It was my emotional well-being that was down the dumps.
Yeah.
Not knowing how to handle that aspect, the mindset, the beliefs, the energy of money that we don't get taught. I mean, rarely getting taught financial literacy as it is. I mean, that might have shifted, has shifted in schools and in education, but to hear about the psychology of money and how the stories that we've inherited or took on from family generationally, you know, if we're not looking at that, that's is so strong in our lives. So it had a big impact on me. So when I had all those things happen with the foreclosure and losing my job, the amount of shame and guilt that I experienced was, it was crazy making. I didn't know what to do. So when somebody was like, why don't you just go check this financial advisor out? I said, oh, all right. And that exacerbated the shame.
Actually. Yeah. I mean, you know, it sounds like you were looking for support through traditional means and you weren't getting it. And so then what happened?
I ended up
break getting... up with the boyfriend. Did you kick the financial advice?
The boyfriend to the curb. But what I did was I really had that moment of like, there's got to be a better way. And I think we all have that. And it can come in, you know, through the lens of money where we're just like, this can't be all there is. Like I just can't. And this is my invitation to listeners, you know, wherever I speak, but here with Emerging Women is there's the invitation to question, like, is this all there is? Am I supposed to be in fear or scarcity around money for the rest of my life? Like, when does this end? And so I started to have this own come to Jesus kind of conversation with myself of, all right, Christine, you got to get honest about what's going on. Because I was in denial. I didn't want to look at it. I was scared to look at it. I didn't know how to look at it. So I didn't know where to start. But even before that, I had to say, I'm ready to change something. I had to make that decision. And from that decision, did my own deep dive into personal development work around finances and money, and went to I went to a coaching certification program for my own kind of investment myself. And then ended up, once I graduated, ended up saying, I have to help others with this. You know, I can't be the only one who's going through this.
Yeah.
Internally. And there's some men and women. So I'm not saying that it's just women, but we're all grappling with money stories that we've grown up with or have happened in our lives or experiences that have happened in our lives. And we need a place for that voice to happen. And that's why I'm so grateful to be on this podcast, because it gives the microphone, it puts the microphone open to all of us to share. We all have money stories. We actually have many, many similar feelings about it, even if the circumstances were different, allows that to be reconciled in this way, even in the smallest bit, can help us move forward in our relationship with money.
Yeah, totally. And one little step forward allows us to take the next step with more bravery and the next step. And I'd love to get into a little bit more detail. Come a few of the things that, you know, some of this is in your book and some of it I just kind of want to talk about, but you were the first person to move west of the Hudson River. Okay. So you had something in you after that after 9/11 that just said, you know, reach for something different. And you took a brave step and things were going good. And then you reached a bump, and I'm wondering at what point and what were the details of sort of the patterning, just to give us an idea of what that looks like? Like, what was it in your patterning that was a big aha for you that allowed you to like wake up? Because it's specific for everybody, right? And you said you had working class parents. And so how did you like really break free from those tendrils?
Yeah.
Like, what was it specifically?
I think back of that idea that, am I supposed to just be in fear all the time? Mm-hmm. Like, it was just that questioning of, the way that I ended up out here is, and I look back even to that decision, I think there was a divine hand, and I think there's a divine hand on all of our backs, whether it's guiding us or it's like a gentle nudge, or it's just like, I got your back energy. Mm. And when I moved out west, it was that, because I was moving away from my family of origin that never left. Nobody leaves New York City. They barely leave the time zone still. And I feel like it was the same thing. Like, there was just this divine aspect of me that was a mirror to myself, and I was open to receiving that. And I think that really is one of the key pieces of flourishing with finances, is our ability to listen, to receive, to be in relationship with this entity called money. I always felt like it had power over me. And it's something in that moment, in those days, was no more. I will not tolerate this anymore. And I think we often all can get to a point where, in very many different circumstances, where it's like, I'm not going to take this anymore. And that's what it was with me with money, especially since I was supposed to be the money expert.
Well, I think it's interesting too, with the working class parents, and that environment tends to be, you know, very conservative, right? In terms of money, and, you know, make sure you've got just enough, you know, and yet you start your book. First of all, there's a crown throughout all of these chapters, and it says it's okay to have everything you want.
Yes.
So push it, right? I don't know if it was okay to have everything you want when you grow up in a working class East Coast family.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you took the leap and then suffered a few steps back. And then you really had to lean on that philosophy as it was being shaped.
Yeah. And part of that probably had to be being away from my family.
Yeah.
All due respect to them if they listen to this, but like, I had to step away from that paradigm and see another paradigm.
Yeah.
Almost like the going from one vine to the next. There was a leap. There was an uncertainty. And the blinders started to open. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
There's got to be another way. And this idea that it's okay to have everything I want is from the philosophy that if I truly believe in the divinity that I am, the universe is within me. I am that. I'm the source. Then why wouldn't it be okay? If it helps my life force energy move forward, why wouldn't it be okay to feel joy and feel passion and feel desire? And I think that, did I get, you know, Christine, cultivate your desire back in parochial school in New York City? No way. Actually, you know, religion was, I grew up in Roman Catholic and went to Catholic school for most of my school years. So desire was something that was not cultivated or even talked about. So I did have to step out, and that is step out of the paradigm that was so closely placed on me with being in for my family and stuff like that. And with, like, I love them dearly, and maybe it's part of me that's the rebel, but it's contrast. And I think in contrast, we get to see the fuller spectrum of life. And that doesn't mean that it's comfortable all the time either.
Hello, lovely listeners. I want to pause for a moment here to make sure that you know how you can get even more access to this type of inspiration and support. Emerging Women has its own membership community, where you get teachings from incredible female leaders and coaching support directly from me, as well as other brilliant members within the Emerging Women Tribe every month. If you are ready to go deeper into your own leadership and emerging journey, head over to emergingwomen.com for a free trial of our membership community. We've truly designed it as a hub for women like you who want to create change in the world. Don't go it alone, sisters. Head over to emergingwomen.com/membership and start your free trial today. Now, let's get back to our conversation. Now, I happen to have the gift of knowing you. And if someone were just listening to this, they would think, oh, it's money is energy. It's all love and light. But you are so practical and you're all about the cash flow. And, you know, I mean, I feel that side of you too. And at what point did you, you know, here you are evolving this money is energy. I got to change my beliefs. And at what point did you reclaim that strong foundation? And how did that foundational relationship with money, meaning the super practical, evolve with this new lens of belief system, the universe has my back, money is energy, all of that? How did they come together? And how did the practical stuff evolve?
Yeah, well, the practical stuff, you know, after I moved here and having my degree in accounting and finance, I mean, as is anything, there are foundational tools that steeped in patriarchy, steeped in capitalism, there is a container. And first, we are working in a society that some of that container still works. You know, we have banking institutions, we have just structures that are in place that we're still living within. What I align a lot with nature. And nature sees a balance of both yin and yang, masculine and feminine. And when I working down on Wall Street and you seeing, you know, the sort of real masculine energy, if we're not seeing a weaving of the other aspect of it, then we're not completely whole. So taking in, I, as you know, I'm all about like, what's the cash flow? What are the numbers? Mm-hmm. That's the container. That's the, you know, the form that we need to have. It's the riverbanks. And without that, without the river, with the flow, which is our feminine aspect of money, which is more about receptivity, trust, reciprocity, neither one gets to be amplified. Mm. And so that was a key thing for me as I brought this work forward. I was like, you can't be the queen of your money without still knowing your profit and loss statement, what your balance sheet's about. You know, that still is a part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And that masculine container, the more certainty part of it, the structure only shines when the feminine aspect is there in its contrast to, you know, and the feminine, the flow, the ability to understand our inner world around money, that can only shine with the masculine container as well. So, like I said, there's plenty of people that I worked in accounting for years after I came back to life after my foreclosure and the perfect storm of financial issues that had happened. And I worked in accounting, and I just remember so much structure that people would still come in the office and be in fear about the money. And I said, this can't be the only way to look at money, right? There's got to be, it's not just the numbers. There's story there. There's emotion connected to it. And the feminine aspect of connecting with our emotions allows us to, I think, leverage structure in finances.
Interesting. What, if any, is the role of vulnerability in that equation? Because I know a lot of women, especially when, you know, we have a lot of entrepreneurs in our audience as well as executives, but I think there's a lot more fear and insecurity and unknown in the entrepreneurial world with women and their money. than I see with, you know, you're getting a fat paycheck from a tech company. You're a little bit more, you don't have these issues.
Yeah.
How can you help women specifically deal with that vulnerability? And what are some of the mindsets around that, that can help us thrive?
Yeah. Well, with money and is risk. And I think whenever risk is involved in, whether we're in corporate, whether we're entrepreneurs, like wherever the risk is, whether it's going, you know, asking for the raise, or it's, I'm going to start a new business, or I'm going to start a new income stream. Inherent in that risk is vulnerability. Is the, this may not work out. Can I be okay with that? Can I be okay with me? Can I start over? I think one of the biggest mindsets around, and it might be like this working class kind of mindset, it's like, don't make a mistake. It's not okay to make mistakes. If you make a mistake, you're doomed. And if we live by that as emerging women, elevating our consciousness that it's not okay to make mistakes, we're not going to emerge. We're not going to evolve. So inherent in us growing is being outside the comfort zone, being at the, our growth edge. And just built into that is our own vulnerability of, it's okay if this doesn't go the way that I want, because there's going to be another opportunity. So it's really getting honest and humble in a way. I love the idea of the spiritual practice of beginner's mind. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what this means. It's okay. And it's okay that I don't know, because either I'll stay in curiosity and inquiry around it, or my favorite saying, like, who, not how, who does know how to make this happen. And I think as we grow as particularly entrepreneurs, but also C-suite executives, us having the vulnerability to say, I don't know it all. I don't know it all about money or finances. I want to bring in someone like Christine, or someone, you know, who can help support the team, and I can shine in my zone of genius, as native genius, as we say here in Emerging Women, right? Mm-hmm. We can shine there, but it takes vulnerability of letting go. Mm. And we're still hanging on to that mindset of, I have to do it all. You know, whether that's steeped in the whole I'm an independent woman thing, I don't know, but letting go, being able to make mistakes, being okay with that, reconciling that. And as you're hearing me talk about that in the audience, just feeling what that feels like in the body to hear, like, wait, I don't want to make a mistake with my money. It's a big glitch, because it's not going to put you in a space of vulnerability from a place of, you know, you're going there, like conscious vulnerability.
Mm. Yeah. Where we choose it.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Instead of trying to, it's funny. We just posted a blog about this last month, I can't even keep track anymore, but it was all about leading versus fitting in. And
love that.
Yeah. Like, can we go into the unknown? Right? Because fitting in is like, let me get clear. And I feel like as entrepreneurs, we always want to get clear. And yet the real superpower is being able to be comfortable, as you say, with fear and risk and the unknown, and almost saying, like, I know I'm going to fail when I'm leading versus fitting in. Right. When I'm fitting in, I'm just following a system here. So I know I'm not going to fail over there if I just try and fit in. But when I lead, I'm going to fail. And I encourage people to say, you're going to fail and be okay with failing.
Yeah.
So that you can take those risks.
Yeah.
Because there's no creativity without risk either.
Exactly. Exactly. And that it's challenged. When you put money into the mix of that, it's like, well, hold on. I'm okay with vulnerability and risk and making mistakes with something over here, but not necessarily with money. So how do I reconcile that? And I think that is individual to everyone, mm-hmm. but even in the opportunity to see, okay, what would it be like to make a mistake if I invested in something? If everything truly, and if mm-hmm. we believe everything is truly happening for our expansion of humanity, mm-hmm. then if I was to lose money on a stock or a sale or something that didn't go through, do I have the resources and the courage to do the next thing? Because inherent in every problem is a solution. Mm-hmm. It's if we get stuck looking at the problem, then we're not looking at the solution. Can I, if I lost that money or that investment or whatever it is, am I okay with that? And what would I do? I mean, I think I often ask my clients this question, like, if everything was taken away, if all the money and everything was taken away, and I live in a remote part of Colorado, I think of going up on the pass here and living in a tent on the mountain pass, and I had nothing left except my cell phone, maybe a list of contacts and $100 or something.
Yeah.
What would I do? Would I be able to start over? And I would imagine in our community here in Emerging Women, we all have that sort of like light in us that says, you know what? I think I could do that, you know? And it's when we can touch on that end of the spectrum, we open mm-hmm. up the other side of the spectrum, which is the side that's like, well, I can let anything in if I'm okay with anything going, you know, it's that shadow aspect and acknowledging it. So vulnerability is huge. It's been a huge learning curve for me because 2 + 2 is supposed to equal 4 and no other way around it.
Yes. Yes.
It wasn't okay to make mistakes. When you made a mistake, you got punished for it or you were put to your room. Or so I invite everyone to just think about how making a mistake with money in your past can now be brought up and reconciled in a way just by having like maybe hearing these words, like it's okay. You know, the debt, the bad investment, the lost sale, whatever it is that you're the creator of this money. You're the source. Mm.
Yes. And I love that. You are the source. Oh, that is so deep. Another teacher, Michelle Masters, that I revere, she does NLP work and she has a program on money. And I've heard her say exactly the same thing, that you are the source. And you know what? Sometimes I feel like, and just to bring in Emerging Women, when we have a corporate client, I get confused about that, Christine. I feel like I'm saying the client's the source. So this tech company is the source. Like, and if that source dries up, then I don't have anything. Right. But that is so profound. You are the source. You and your relationship, as you say, with that hand on your back, which I love that image, a gentle hand. Sometimes it feels like a shove. Let's just be honest. But anyway, okay.
But then there's the other on the other side catching you.
Yeah, right? There we go. And I loved that. Like when you're leaning back, it's the hand is there. When you need to go forward, the hand is there. It's such a beautiful imagery that, and you being the source. I mean, that's like, I have what I got from this conversation, like a reminder that we create the money, not that we're out there with like a bucket, like hoping to catch a few coins that are falling randomly from the sky.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause then we're looking for others to save us, and we don't need saving. We don't need saving. We're looking for the client to save us, the promotion to save us, and we're then still at the power, at the effect of this entity called money. Money is inanimate, essentially. It's a tool. It's like a hammer.
It's a hammer.
You know, and we are 70 trillion cells of magnificence. Let's just get this dynamic a little more straightened out.
Let's make that money our bitch. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. Exactly. So.
Yeah. So one of the things, a section, I can't remember what chapter, I think it's chapter 4 in the book, where you say that they're like the lies and truth of money. Could you give us like one or two of those in the context specifically around women and our audience here?
I think one that is popping up for me mainly is this idea that there's not enough or it isn't here. There's just not enough to go around. I am learning and understanding to the degree that is there some institutional things in place that don't allow people to get what they need financially, materially, whatever it is, from nourishment, et cetera. Yes. And it's designed that way. And that's unfortunate because I think this is an abundant, really abundant universe. And we get to see that nature is such a great reflection. Yeah. So that would be a lie, and that we aren't able to access that, whether that's, you know, abundance is something that has many forms, and we could be, and that's why I have that curiosity for myself. If I had nothing, could I still feel abundant up on that mountain pass in my tent? And I do. That was an honest, would it be comfortable all the time? I don't know, but having lots of money, I've worked with clients who have trust funds of $40 million, you know, and does that always feel comfortable? No, it didn't for them. And people who have had nothing. So we're experiencing similar feelings, similar patterning, regardless of the amount in our bank account. Mm-hmm. So the idea that we are enough, we are part of the universe, we are the source, we are the creator, and we get to pay attention to the things that, if money's something that you want to grow, just like anything else, kids, plants, garden, we water it and pay attention to it. And that becomes the more the structure. How is the money flowing in into the bookkeeping? Is it easy for people to pay you? Am I asking for what I need? I think that's a big one for women across the board, is asking for what we really need, and that it is okay for us to have what we want more than just getting by. And that's not taking away from anyone else.
I just want to pause there, because more than just getting by, is it okay, every listener on this podcast right now, is it okay for us to have more than enough? Right? Because I find that with women, and it's tied to there is not enough, right?
Yeah.
How about we ask for more than enough?
Yeah.
And how do we react to imagining that there's so much abundance that we can create that allows us to get out of this, all I need is this, or, you know, this sort of like, can we raise the bar on what enough feels like in our lives? Mm. And I think this, you know, your work does that.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's okay to have more than enough.
Yeah. I think all boats rise with the tide. So if we're holding back thinking that's going to serve the humanity, it doesn't. That's not the way dynamics work in our world. It's we all rise with the tide. So us all supporting each other in creating this tool, this money, allows us to all rise, humanity in general. And there are stats about how much women, when they make money, contribute back to their communities versus men. And again, this is not necessarily a conversation of like women do it better, or with women's it's the way to go, or anything like that. It's just a recalibration of the different skills that a masculine energy brings and a feminine energy brings to the concept of money. And
100%,
that
goal, yeah,
it takes two to tango kind of thing.
We love the men here at Emerging Women. We love the men. And it's about having more of the feminine. Right now, the feminine is pinned down, especially in the area of money. That feminine energy is just like cramped and squeezed and not allowed to express itself in the same way that the masculine energy of money has been expressed. What does the feminine energy of money look like? And the research shows, and you know, I'm careful about men and women versus masculine and feminine. Of course, we're talking about the energies of masculine and feminine, And men and women have both. But I will say it's interesting gender-wise what you say, the research. It's like when women are in charge of the money, when they make money, they distribute it to their communities. Those communities thrive. The distribution systems talk about like all of the different stakeholders within that community. There's way more thriving in those communities where women have a hand in the money. Yeah. And that's just basic research.
Yeah. Give me the chills.
I know. And so it's a vote for gender-oriented power. You know, let's get more women into money. Let's get more women into finance. Let's get more diversity into finance. Absolutely. Let's get more diversity into AI. I mean, don't even get every area of power.
Yes.
And leadership needs to have more diversity so that our systems can reflect a more balanced version of what it means, not just to have money, but to have power.
Yes.
And so it's okay to have a little bit of a gender lens here. And yes, we're talking about masculine and feminine, and I like to reorient that way. And yes, we love the men.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So I appreciate you calling that out. And those are two very powerful, and there's a lot more in the book, Be the Queen of Your Money. And if you were going to give women, as we're wrapping up here, some advice on how to really, I mean, obviously the book is fantastic. You can get the book. I believe is it published right now?
Yeah, thank you. It'll be out within the month, and it'll be on Amazon, and you'll be able to find it on my website as well. So, and that'll be in the show notes, I believe, is the website.
Show notes, website, Christine M. Walsh, W-A-L-S-H, Christine with a C, .com. There's also lots of juicy tidbits on there, endorsements. She has programs, she has courses, and her business does support entrepreneurs. So if you need to scale your business or get some of that financial help so you're not doing, as she says, everything by yourself and burning out. Let's not do that, ladies. Let's not do that. All right. You'll get so much more. We're not going to do that. But it's not just about the books. It's about those mindsets. So those mindsets are, I meant the books, the financial books, but it is about this book. All the mindsets are in this book. And thank you so much, Christine. It's been a pleasure. But please, let's end with what's the message, like if you were going to wrap and you were going to give us one thing to walk away with, what would it be?
I would say for everyone who's listening, have an honest conversation with yourself about your money. One of the offerings that I exercises, and at the end of every chapter in the book, is an exercise of either being or doing around money. And one of the exercises in there is around this idea, if money is this entity in your life and you were in relationship with that entity, how might you describe that relationship? And this is for your eyes only. If you are someone who's like, I want to do better around money, answer that question. If you were in relationship with this entity, as if you were in relation with a human, which, let me be the disclaimer, this isn't to say that money is like a human or anything like that, but it's this entity, this energy. If you were in really close relationship with them, how might you describe that relationship? And then answer the question, how might you want that relationship to look like? And when we start right in any relationship, if we want to improve it, communication's key, understanding is key. So that's the first step, is start a new relationship with money if you want to improve it. And definitely answer those questions, because you'll be in awe of like, no, this is really what I want with money. It doesn't have to be the way that you grew up. It doesn't have to be the way that you're hearing out in the news and the media. This gets to be on your terms. This gets to be on your terms, because why not? Why? It's okay for us to have everything that we want. And that might rub against some things. There's going to be values conflict with that. And that's okay. Like, we don't have to give it a story. We don't have to make ourselves bad, good, wrong, right, or about it. We just get to ask the question, being the curiosity around it. So money loves curiosity.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time, and everything else will be in the show notes. So great to have you, and can't wait to see the work unfold even further.
Thank you. Thank you, Chantel. Thank you, everyone.
Take care.
Be well. Bye for now.